These are words from one of my favorite songs by Baz Luhrmann. Maybe you'll marry, maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have children, maybe you won't. Maybe you'll divorce at 40. Maybe you'll dance the funky chicken on your 75th wedding anniversary. And that really ties into this episode. So society tells us that the journey is dating and marriage and house and a child and a white picket fence, but it doesn't always work out that way. And it doesn't always go as you expect it to either. In this episode, my amazing friend Hannah, who was actually my friend of honor at my wedding, she joins me to talk about when you think your life is going one way and you realize you want something else completely and everything changes and then you're divorced at 31. So this is that story. It's a story of divorce, yes, but ultimately it's a story of finding yourself. And I really hope that you find it inspiring and reassuring and interesting. So let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Welcome to the podcast, Honey.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to have you.
I'm excited, I think.
I think. Before our listeners, Hannah and I go back many, many years. We actually went to school together.
Yeah.
When we were little babies back in Sussex.
Yeah.
And went through our wild years together, for sure. And now are probably in our weird years together.
Yeah.
We both had pretty similar journeys. So we went to we left our hometowns. We went to uni. We got jobs. We both met our partners and previous partner at the same time, when we used to live together. And then we both left our flat to go and live with our respective partners.
Yeah.
And then we both got married.
We did. And that's where things changed.
That's when the weird years, or maybe that's not when the weird years start. Maybe the weird years start before then. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I think that's it. It's like, for me, that kind of sums up what the weird years are. Mm. Like, we were doing all the same things. Like, yes, we've known each other since we were 8. Yeah, like, had some like crazy teenage times, but like, we were on track to do like what's been expected of us, I guess, right? Yeah, like moving in with a partner, getting married, and then my partner and I separated after being married for a year. We're now in the process of divorcing. So yeah, it's been about 2 years since we separated. Mm. So obviously, and you got married earlier this year. So yeah, like now we're doing pretty different things, having followed pretty much the same journey for a long time.
It's a crazy journey, but I feel like it's quite an unusual, like it is unusual, right? It's like elephant in the room. It's kind of unusual to like be separated and like getting divorced at such a young age.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny because it like, I guess definitely in the circle of people of like who have been like my closest friends for a long time, like I'm at least like the only person who's gone through a divorce that I know. But obviously it's not that uncommon like in the wider scheme of things. So it is quite funny when it did feel quite lonely to start with. But like the more I become aware of it, like the more I hear about other people doing similar things and like, you know, it's just maybe just not in certain circles that it happens so much, I guess.
I mean, it's maybe weird in our circle or unusual in our circle, but it's also statistically just a matter of time for everyone, no?
Yeah, that's right. 1 in 2 marriages, they say. So
we love that. We love that. So you actually just beat everyone to the post.
Exactly. I always like to win.
You do like to win. That's true. And you got there first, so congratulations. So like, where are you at with divorce?
So like, obviously the breakup itself was really hard. But yeah, it's now been about 2 years since we decided to separate. But now I'm like, I'm feeling in such a good place about it. And I'm like recognizing divorce for like a milestone in itself. Like, you know, and I've been, I think particularly like the last year, just like felt like celebrating so much, like so many friends, like marriages and like a lot of my friends starting to have babies and things, which is great. And I love celebrating that. But it did feel a little bit like, okay, like I'm going through like a big life change as well. Mm. And I want to do something to mark that. So that's why I'm like, I'm planning this divorce party in a few months' time, which I'm really excited about. And it's just like, yeah, just about celebrating it for the big life decision that it is. And yeah, and just a new chapter, I guess.
I actually love what you said about like it being a milestone in itself. Like, how do you wrap your head around that?
Yeah, because I think it's been a journey in the sense that like it is obviously such a sad thing to start with. So like, but then to come through that and to realize like no, like that was a positive decision to get me to where I am now, where I'm feeling much more myself and like, and can recognize it was the right thing to do, that's the part that I want to celebrate, is just like, I guess like making a decision for yourself, right? Like that might not be easy, but like doing the right thing for you.
Mm. One of the things I've always like really looked up to you for is that like you're just very like headstrong. I think people kind of underestimate you because they think you're really quiet and timid, yeah. But like that's just so not a reality of your personality. Like when they first meet you, maybe they're like, oh, Hannah's very quiet, and sometimes people are like, how are you as such a gobby, yeah, loud mouth, like how is she one of your best friends? And yeah, it's like you've always been super headstrong. Like how did you come to that decision? Because there's a lot of stigma, right, of being like, hey, I'm gonna pull the plug on this thing after being married for a year.
Yeah, it was obviously really hard, but I think when I got to that stage of just sort of questioning whether it was the right thing for me, it then just became, it was almost just like once that seed was in, it just became something I couldn't ignore anymore. Mm. And it was almost like such a physical thing, like I was just so, like I just knew it to be true, and I was like, I can't hide from this anymore. So yeah, had to do what was right, I guess.
How was that reaction, like having or telling friends and family? And
Friends, I don't know, it was very mixed. Like a lot of people were like, oh, are you sure, like do you know, maybe you just need a bit more time. And there was definitely a lot of factors involved. Like, so I got married when I was 29. My ex and I, we separated after about 6 months of being married, just before I turned 30. We were on a break for a few months, then got back together, and that didn't work out, and then finally separated. So I think there was a lot at play there, like turning 30, I think was just like a big thing for me, where, you know, just sort of looking forward, like down the timeline of my life, and just sort of thinking about like, okay, this is it forever now. Whereas like, I think throughout your 20s, like there's so much more that you know that's coming, more changes. And then I was at that point where I was like, oh, right, this is it really now. So I think that was a huge influence. And obviously getting married, you know, there was, you know, like a few months after that, like it just made me reassess things as well. I think it was also to do with COVID as well. Like, you know, my ex and I had been living together throughout lockdown for a couple of years, and like were very like isolated, you know, together. And then that sort of changing and like the world opening up again and realizing like there's all these exciting things going on that I haven't been part of for a couple of years. So all of those were at play, which I think then, like going back to your question about how people reacted to it, like I think like a few friends were like, oh, you know, are you sure, like there's all of this going on as well? And I think, you know, my family were initially, my parents, I don't think they got it really initially. But I think the more I spoke to them about it, you know, all they wanted was for me to be happy. And I think having gone through that journey of like taking a break, getting back together, you know, I knew I really tried. Like I think anyone could see that as well. It wasn't just a flippant decision. Like we really tried to work on it. So I think people could see that, you know, it taken a lot of thought. And I think, as well, like I think anyone I know now can see that I feel a lot more myself. And so I think everyone kind of understands it now, really.
Yeah. And I guess like in the promise to be like brutally honest on this podcast, like I 100% was in that camp of like, oh my God, like, are you sure? Like you're throwing a big fat fucking bomb into your life right doing this. Are you sure you haven't just like, it's the excitement of like the a lockdown being over and like, I don't know, like, are you having a freak out that you're turning 30? I was like, are you just having like a big midlife crisis and you don't want to commit to this thing?
No, I know. I didn't want to single you out, but yeah, that is like,
well, when I said some people, it was you.
But I remember you saying like, oh, are you not just like having a commitment freak out?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, like I think maybe I am, but also like that does feel like a valid thing, like a valid feeling. Like, yes, like commitment is scary, but also like I think in the context of what I was saying about like turning 30 and like, yeah, then that idea of like, yeah, committing forever, like, and not being sure if I wanted to do that, at least in that situation, you know. And yeah, it definitely did play into it.
I also feel like so many people don't really like have that honest conversation with themselves. Like obviously you can never judge what's going on in other people's relationships, but I do sometimes think like the trodden path is so trodden that it's like people just do it anyway. It's like, oh, I've been living with that person for ages. And then it is when you actually sit down and look on paper, like, do you literally want to wake up next to that person for the rest of your life potentially?
Yeah.
Like that is actually a huge, massive decision, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think like in my situation, it was like, you know, we can talk about kids and stuff, like, but that wasn't something that we as a couple wanted. But I think like, and I think if that is something that obviously changes things, like that's the big next chapter, right?
Yeah.
If that's something you're working towards, and that wasn't there for us. So it was, and then it becomes a whole lifestyle question about like, okay, if we're not having kids together, what does that look like? And there's so many different ways, you know, different ways to do that. So yeah, I think that maybe sort of like pushed that question forward for me, where it's like, yeah, if we'd been planning on having kids, you know, that might not have come up ever, or like, you know, years down the line. But I think without that, like, to look forward to, it just sort of, I could just sort of see this, like, yeah, the rest of my life just as it was. And that was quite scary, really.
Yeah. Do you think if you'd wanted kids, like, cause I mean, you were pretty ballsy with it, like loads of people would have sat on that for like a really long time. I think most people would have sat on it for years. Like, people are not great at pulling off the plaster with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was lots of things. I think, like I was saying, like, this, it was just like a very like physical feeling, and I just never really had anything like that before, where I was just like, I am so consumed with this, like, I just sort of know that this is the right thing to do. If kids had been on the cards, like, well, I don't know, it just would have changed the whole relationship dynamic, really. And sure. It was just not something that was there for us. I don't know.
Yeah. At first I was like, oh shit, she like blowing up her life, and is this going to be like a big oopsie daisy in a couple of months? But then on the other side, I mean, there were some weird months.
Yeah.
There were some weird months after that were just different for you.
I'm not sure what you're getting at.
I don't know where I'm getting at this either.
Is it when I was sleeping on the the chair in your spare room?
I mean, you did sleep in the chair in the studio for like 3 weeks.
Yeah. No, there were some weird times, but you know, it was all like part of the process. And like, I think that has been the hardest thing about the last 2 years, really, is like the identity crisis I've had, really. Because, yeah, I was in that relationship for 8 years.
Yeah.
We met when I was 22, separate when I was 30. Like, that is a huge chunk of life, but also, like, such formative years, like, when you,
definitely,
you know, learn a lot about who you are. And then, yeah, suddenly not being that person anymore was, like, a massive identity crisis, which I hadn't anticipated, I think.
Tell me more.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because it's not like I ever thought of myself as being defined by that relationship, or like by being someone's partner, but like and friendships were something that, some friendships I found really difficult to navigate afterwards, where it's just like, I don't know, like, everyone's in these long-term relationships, and I had always felt very comfortable with who I was in that circle, right? And like, you know, people talk about their relationships, and I'd always be able to like chip in and talk about my own relationship as well. And then suddenly not having that, but also that being quite painful to talk about, at least in the first few months, where I was like, oh, I just don't know how to be part of this conversation anymore. And like, and just finding myself in situations where I just had to sort of check in with myself about who I was and how I participated in these things. And that was, yeah, definitely something that I hadn't expected. And I guess going back to what you started talking about, where it's like, you know, us doing the same thing for most of our lives, and then that sort of shifting, is a, yeah, that more widely with friendships has been, I think, yeah, an unexpected difficulty about the breakup, where it's like, are we, like, with all my like childhood friends, or like friends I've had for a long time, like, just being able to relate one-on-one to what they're doing with their life, because we were always doing the same thing. And then suddenly being like, oh, like, I can't relate to what you're doing right now. You can't relate to what I'm doing right now. And that just really changes things. But like, I'm now in a place where I think that's actually really great. And I love talking to friends about the different things that we're all doing. And I actually think that gives like a whole new dynamic to friendships, where you can actually, you're still friends despite all the different things that you're going through, But that was like a big shock when I was like, oh, okay, we don't have these things in common anymore. And yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, that's unexpected, as yeah. you said.
And, you know, you think like, oh, yeah, like a breakup or a divorce is like obviously a big life change. Mm. At least like, I was thinking about it like in terms of just the relationship and like, oh, this person who's like a massive part of my life isn't going to be in it anymore. But there's so much more to it than that, which I hadn't really thought about.
What else kind of like came out of the woodwork as a surprise?
So yeah, the friendships was one of the most difficult ones. I'd say like my sister, I'm really close to my sister, mm. as you know, and she hadn't had a serious relationship and then met her now boyfriend pretty much as me and my ex were separating. So that was a really strange dynamic for like, yeah, just that changed, a big change for both of us mm. and a sort of role reversal really. Yeah, she's my younger sister, but then was very much like supporting me going through that while she was, yeah, now in her first like long-term relationship. So that's been a bit of a weird, unexpected shift as well.
Mm. So you said your relationship to other people and friends changed mm. quite a lot. What else kind of like shifted in that time? Like how you said your relationship to yourself, you had a bit of an identity crisis. Like yeah. how did that play out?
Yeah, I mean, there's like, I guess different elements to it, like specific to being married and separating was like my name. So I changed my name when I got mm. married. And I found that like just like very triggering for a long time, like trying to sort all of that out. And like I kept forgetting because I went back to using my maiden name and I kept forgetting that legally my name was my married name. And I'd like booked flights under the wrong name and stuff. And just like, and that was all just not only just like annoying, but like quite like upsetting to then yeah. have to go and sort out. There was one point where I was like, I was trying to get a new phone contract and I failed the money laundering checks because there wasn't enough under my married name or the name I used. And I just got so upset about it because I was like, they're basically telling me that I don't like exist, right, as a person. But it's like that's just because of this breakup. And it was like, I just can't escape it. And it also felt just a bit unfair because it was like, he doesn't have to do any of this, right? Like mm. his name didn't change. And it's like, I'm just trying to move on from that. And there's certain things that are just following me around and I can't escape the fact that I am going through this. Yeah. So that was quite frustrating.
It's probably like also those things that it feels like maybe they are easier for men, full mm. stop. Like I've been seeing, I don't know if you've seen this thing on TikTok, which is about like decentering men in your life.
Oh, right.
It's like this massive movement. Like obviously there's so many movements going across the world of like just hardcore feminist pushback, which okay. love to see. But there's one which is about like decentering men in your life. And it talks about how like women so much are perceived by their relationship to a man, like as mm. being somebody's wife, and like they're in a friendship group where like it's the wives of the men yeah. and like there's all these like little things in society where you're really where your place is because of your relationship to a man, whether that's your son or your partner or a brother or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole kind of movement around decentering men. So there's things like going into the office like without wearing makeup, for example, right. which people would be like, well, how's that decentering men? It's like, well, in your decision of getting ready in the morning, yeah. you're not like going to fall to a societal standard, which ultimately has been set by men.
Right.
Or like there's all these kind of shifts of people being like, I'm just not going to be defined by that. Do you feel like that's kind of how you felt? Like, letting go of that, I guess, a status in a way.
I think it was more just like being someone's partner. Like we'd been together for so long that I was just so used to having that other person around. Because I don't, like I said, like I never really felt like defined as being his partner. Like mm. that wasn't something I associated as my identity. So then I think that was part of the reason why I found it so surprising how much it impacted my identity, the breakup. But it's more just like having that one person and then like looking to other people to fill that role, I guess, like looking for friendships in like a slightly different way where I can just like text my friends about like the little everyday stuff where I'd like sort of always relied on my ex for. Mm. And also just like, yeah, again, just sort of like having that in common with friends who have also been in long-term relationships where, you know, that was just quite difficult to navigate to start with. It's just like things like going away and things like I never like would have thought about like who I'm doing all this stuff with. Like, you know, you always have someone there that like you can rely on who like is around to do stuff with. And then suddenly being like, oh, like are all my friends doing it with their partners? Am I going to be the only one who's like not doing stuff? That's not the case at all. Like I like, but it did like require a bit of a change of mindset a little bit to be like, oh, okay. Yeah, I don't have that one person as a default anymore. Like there, I just have to like look a bit more widely at like how I'm going to do things and like socialize and stuff.
Who your network is.
Yeah.
It was weird like watching you kind of go through that because there's so many emotions because like on one, obviously, you know, it's not about me, but the way that I perceived it at first, I was like fear for you because I was like, oh my God, like how is this going to impact your life? But then I think fairly quickly there was like this massive excitement. Mm-hmm. And I think once you'd like got over obviously the pain of it all, well, not that it's always over, but like you started to move through that, there was also this like excitement of like what this life was going to be for you.
Exactly. And I think that, I guess, like ties into what I was saying before about like the time in life that this happened, like the fact that it was like 29, 30 and the end of sort of COVID. I did just have this real sense of like, there is so much going on out there. Like there are so many opportunities, like all these things I want to do. And then I think in the immediate aftermath of that breakup, like I did find it harder than I was maybe expecting. And then was like, oh, okay, like I need to take some time before I'd like put myself out there. But then it does feel like once I've got through that, I am like excited about all the stuff that's going on now and like, and making the most of it, you know.
So what's going on now? Like what are those big shifts? Because you said you had like a, you know, this big identity shift, and like what's exciting you now in this kind of new life that you have?
Dating, having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Just like it's so liberating, just I guess to like the other side of what I was just saying about like being in a relationship and just having that one person that you always know you can count on. Like now I'm at a place being single where I'm just like, I'm really enjoying not having to answer to anyone. Like I literally just can think about myself, right? And like I can just go out if I want to. And like it sounds really trivial, but it's a huge change in mentality where you're like, I can just put myself first.
Yeah.
For everything really.
Can relate. Yeah, because even though like even if you have a partner who doesn't really expect like loads from you, you do inadvertently, I think even when you have like housemates and stuff, you inadvertently start to kind of like pander for that person's needs, and like everything you do does become part of a decision, like on what based on what they're doing or what they might feel about things.
Yeah, definitely. And like and I think that's obviously like an important part of being in a relationship, right? Like you have to think about them in pretty much everything you do. And that's and it becomes like a subconscious thing, I think, which then it's again something I hadn't really anticipated, but now I'm just, oh, it's really nice just thinking about myself.
It's interesting because people always like paint what do they call them, like single cat ladies, and like people are so vicious like going after people who are single by choice, which is like how I feel your situation is, right? Like you've ended your marriage and you're, in your words, like having fun.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's really interesting the perceptions that I've come across about getting divorced. I'm still surprised at how many people make comments about divorce as if it's like a bad word and stuff. Like there, I think a lot of people like subconsciously have these attitudes that they maybe don't even realize, but like also just so much, oh, you'll meet someone else. And like that has never been,
you're like, bitch, that's not the plan.
That has never been what this was about. And I just really resent it because I'm like, I don't want that to make me happy. Like that I want to be happy. And if I meet someone else, then fine. I want to make myself happy first. And
you're like focusing on your needs first.
Yeah. And like, and then if I meet someone who fits into that, like amazing. But yeah, it's not about meeting another person and just sort of starting again. Like I wanted to get things out of being single, that then to just jump into another relationship to find myself in like a similar situation is like absolutely not the point of it at all, you know?
Yeah. I was doing some research about this stuff because I think the perceptions are really interesting. And actually, like, the data's super confusing around, like, you know, people always say this group's happier, this group's happier. And I was digging into it, and some of the stuff that I found is that apparently single women have more, like, happiness in their day-to-day activities. Mm. Like, that's what's really interesting. Like, if you think of happiness as being, you can measure it in loads of different ways, right? But let's say you have like purposeful happiness, mm-hmm. which might be that you have something that you really care about and there's ups and downs to it, but you feel like you have a purpose in it, versus more hedonistic happiness, which okay. is like your pleasure-seeking happiness. Yeah, so when I was looking into the data on it, it's like the study by the American Time Use Survey, which basically measured pleasure and misery specifically in relation to how people use their time.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily like their happiness overall, mm. but it's like how people use their time. So they ask things like, what tasks do they perform? How do they feel like valued for tasks? Things like, how well do they sleep?
Mm.
And on loads of those questions, the happiest group were single women
okay.
because they spend more time doing pleasurable tasks,
mm.
which I think kind of comes back to yeah. like yourself, right?
Yeah, I definitely think that's it. And like I was saying about how much I get from putting myself first, right, in the day-to-day things, that makes me wonder if like in like a heterosexual relationship, like women can easily fall into this role where they are, yeah, like you use the word like pandering to your partner, mm. right? Where you just end up like accommodating someone else, which obviously like in some ways is a great thing to do in a relationship. It's definitely something I experienced in my relationship where I felt like I was in this role being like this nagging wife. And I was
hate
like,
the being the nagging yeah. wife.
And I just didn't want to be that person, right? Women in relationships can easily find themselves in that
mm.
where they feel like they are looking out for someone else, trying to like get things to work and stuff. But actually, if you're single, you just don't have to think about that, right? Like there's no one to nag. You are in control of yourself and yeah, I can definitely see how that women can be a lot happier just doing that for themselves, right?
Also, like, what's so fucking unfair about, like, the stereotype of a nagging wife? I'm going to sit up for this because it gets me pissed off and rallied. But, like, the thing is with the nagging wife is that none of us want to be that. No. It's like, I'm not actively trying to be a nagging wife, but it's like, if I ask you to do something, like, yeah. I have to do it four times. And then you get the stereotype of, like, the nagging wife, and it's all over comedy sets and it's, like, on TV.
Mm.
But it's like, well, yeah, it is annoying yeah. to, like, ask someone to do something really basic four times.
Right, exactly. And for me, it massively played into how I was feeling about turning 30.
Mm.
Whereas like I'm 29 and I already feel like this, like I'm too young to be in this role. Like I'm not sure you ever feel like ready for it, but yeah. I was very aware that I was in my 20s and feeling like in a, you know, annoying, nagging wife.
Also like it's not hot. That's the other yeah. thing that I think people and men maybe don't put at the forefront of their mind is like, we're obviously all trying to keep it spicy in long yeah. relationships. And it's like, there's nothing that's less hot than like having to ask someone four times to take the bins down.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't make me want to fuck you when you're, when like, I just need you to do this one thing.
Yeah. And also like, it doesn't make me feel hot. Like,
no.
You know, like,
I don't want to be like a butcher's wife, like no. an angry woman in an apron.
Exactly. And that's how I felt. It was like, yeah, like a yeah, middle-aged housewife. And I was like, I'm 29. I'm too hot for this.
Exactly. And you're a child bride being married at 29. Yeah, like that's the other thing. I still feel like a child bride getting married at 32.
I know, shouldn't be allowed.
Was I 32? Yeah, I think I was. Well, technically I was 31. But do you know what else is really funny when I was digging into the research? It's like in all of these things, looking at happiness, generally it's like marriage overall makes people quite happy.
Right.
So technically like married men with children, happiest, they are loving it.
Okay.
I wonder why.
Right.
And then you look at women, married women with children, they're pretty happy. But I do think there's this kind of like survivor's bias of like, if you've built your life
oh, yeah.
and you've got married and you've had kids, like, yeah, you're going to fucking tell yourself that you're happy, mm-hmm. aren't you? Like, and then that's what's so interesting with that other study is when you put them together of people looking at their day-to-day, how they spend their time,
mm.
single women are happier.
Okay.
But when you look at it the other way of like, how happy are you, full stop, married women with children are happier.
Oh, right.
And I think it comes down to that like purpose versus like hedonism.
Mm.
So if you tell yourself that you're really happy in this relationship, in this life mm. that you've built,
okay.
it's not like you really have an eject button. Like as a woman, if you're yeah. a married woman with kids, you don't really have an eject button. You're not allowed to go and start a new family with someone else.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And that makes a lot of sense with what you're saying then about like the day-to-day happiness, right?
Mm.
Rather than like having the purpose. And I think that is like a massive, just like a massive concept. Like how do we be happy without having this big purpose of like having a family?
Yeah.
Which is what, you know, as women, we're always told is like, you know, the ultimate purpose, right? And for me, like I said, like me and my ex, like we weren't planning on having kids, but like I have not really decided whether I want kids or not.
Mm.
And but I did feel like a huge amount of pressure, especially after the breakup, being like, do I need to decide, like, do I want them or not? And actually, I have recently like made peace with just not deciding. And I found that so liberating, just to be like, I'm not going to like force myself to make a decision right now. And like, and just to be like more open about what my life might look like, you know, because I think for so much of my life, I was sort of working towards the next big milestone, right? Like living with my partner, getting married, all of these things. And then I think that was why after getting married, I had this big life-changing moment where I was like, okay, what's the next big thing? And yeah, so I guess that has been a whole journey for me personally to be like, okay, well, now I don't know what the next big thing is,
yeah,
which is like massively scary and a huge change in how I've lived my life up till now. But like such an amazing feeling to be like, okay, yeah, like just to take happiness from like the day-to-day things rather than feeling like I'm working towards something, some like bigger purpose, you know, and just enjoying life.
So sorry for the interruption. Lydia here. If you're liking this episode, please do give it a thumbs up or subscribe. Thank you so much. Sorry, I'll be quiet now. It's also like people ask that question of like, do you want kids in a vacuum, don't they?
Yeah.
Because people say that like, oh, do you want kids? It's like, well, what's the situation in this? Right. Like, do I want kids with like a guy who I'm going to have to tell 15 times to take the bin out?
Yeah.
Or like, do I want kids with someone who's really loaded and is going to get me a nanny? It's like there's 100 right. different versions of what that could look like.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If it feels sometimes like you're forced to say a binary, like, yes, I do or yeah, I don't, yeah. because changing your mind would be so catastrophic, wouldn't it?
That's it. And I think there's so much pressure on that. I think with kids especially, where I'm always wary about talking to people about it, because I say like I'm generally more like, feel like it's more likely that I won't have kids, but I'm also aware that that might change. But I feel like very aware of that when I'm talking about it, that I don't want to speak too strongly one way or the other, because sure. I might change my mind. And I don't want people to be like, oh, but like you didn't want kids. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And yeah, this idea that we can't change our minds about that.
You don't have to be like when I became a vegan.
Yeah.
And I became very outspoken and started an Instagram. And then I was no longer a vegan and it was very uncomfortable for me and other people.
Yeah, but you've already come through that. So well done.
Thank you. I am now very much not a vegan. But yeah, that's so true. And also like it's so outrageously offensive to people for women to not necessarily want to have kids or to like be undecided.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. And it's like the being undecided as well. It's like that. It's like there are people who like don't want kids and they really own that, which is great. But like you also don't have to be that sure, like that you can be on the fence and you can change your mind. And that in itself is quite empowering.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's like you saying about feeling like you have to, or like feeling like that question is asked in a vacuum. Like there are people who know they want kids in a vacuum, like so strongly
regardless.
Yeah. And I think that's amazing to be like, to know that that is so important to you. But I would never be that person. And like, for me, it just depends on like so many other factors. Right. And yeah, so that has been like a whole journey for me to be like, well, let's see what happens. And that's okay.
Yeah. I also feel like deep down in my soul that we're going to see so many more like interesting setups of families. Like I've said this to many people out loud, like if I wasn't with Chris,
yeah,
like I just wouldn't see myself marrying like another man.
Yeah,
like I would either be in a completely like platonic, I think, relationship with like loads of women, yeah, like this amazing coven or raising children.
Yeah,
or like I just think the female relationships are so much like deeper and richer on many ways. And like, I think we're going to see some really interesting stuff of like, people will want to have kids, but they want to have kids maybe in like a less traditional setup.
Yeah. So I think there's like a few things like that makes me think. It's like, I have so many concerns about having children, like to do with like climate change and social media and all these like big things that really scare me about it. That
Which is valid like, as
yeah.
well.
I know, and terrifying.
Yeah.
That make me think like, you know, if I did, like maybe I'd have one child, right? And like, but then it's like, well, how would I do that in like a community? And I think like, I'm sure like we'll see like a lot more people doing that where it's like, okay, there's all these other factors. So where I thought I wanted loads of children, I'm just going to have one. But like this more like communal way of like those kids then growing up together, almost like family, but like, I guess like a network of friends or
yeah,
or whatever. But yeah, I definitely feel like that about the female relationships. And I think what I have found since this breakup, where I've just like, I've always had like great female friends, but like have really just like appreciated that in a new level now, where it's like I just don't feel like I need a romantic relationship in the same way. It's like I've got so many meaningful relationships in my life,
yeah,
that yeah, like I said, like if I do end up in another long-term relationship, that would just be like another layer on top of what I already have. Like it's it yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like a big hole in my life that I need to fill in.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also such an interesting thing of like the least happy group, right, in all data is single men.
Yeah.
And I read this really interesting thing, which was like that for women, a man, obviously, like they have to add value to your life. But because women have such like deep and complex relationships with family members often and with friends, which is proven, like we're much more likely to have deep friendships and less likely to be lonely. And I think, well, what I was reading about is that men are more happy to have a relationship regardless of the quality. Mm-hmm. So actually single men are the least happy because it's for them, it's better to have like that one source of constant support and emotional output and connection than it is to have no one. Whereas for women, you've got that competition with friends.
Right. And I think that's so interesting what you were saying about like this image, like this stereotype of like the crazy cat lady, right? And it's like, oh, this poor, sad single woman. And but actually like a single man is like painted in such a positive way, right? But actually I just think the reality is so different. Like actually like women can be so fulfilled by other relationships. And it's definitely been my experience of dating where like people, there is so much out there that it's like, oh, dating in your 30s, like, you know, like you just got to like snap up any man that is around because it's all like...
Because those eggs are getting old.
Yeah. So and it's
do
just...
Do something.
It's just not reflective of the reality that I've seen at all. Like women in their 30s are hot and men start losing their hair pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah, amen to that. I think people need to be more discriminatory. No, I'm joking. We don't. But I do think like, obviously there's so much pressure put on and it is also due to that like time factor is a big thing, right? People like to whack you around the head with it.
Yeah, exactly. And it comes back to then the decision about having kids. And obviously, if that is something you know is important, then that puts on like a whole level of pressure that you like that you might not have otherwise. And I'm in a fortunate position, I guess, where I'm open to see what happens in that sense. But I'm not going to allow it to put pressure on me in terms of making like big life decisions, you know?
And also like, is that not like the most fucking enlightened, great version of a life that you'd want to have? It's like to have people in your life because you love to have them in your life, not because you need anyone to fill anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's like, I think that's where I got to in terms of like my relationship when it was ending was like, I don't want to be in this just because like we're in this situation and it's like the status quo now. It's like, if we do decide to work things out and stay together, like that's like, I need that to be because that's what we actively want rather than it's just the easiest option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found it so funny. I was looking at this thing about like, well, I was thinking about how growth is looked at so differently with men and women. Right. And like, you get these kind of like Bali, like man bun kind of crypto shaman guys who are doing like, their growth is so like masculinized and it's like doing ice baths and like Iron Man and stuff. And it's like, these dudes will literally do anything rather than just go for a coffee with one of their friends and talk about it. And then female growth is so like demonized as if it's not an amazing like spiritual thing. Like what's more spiritual than being, having like this group of women that you're all really connected to?
Yeah. And yeah. And we was talking recently about like sort of finding a bit more of a like spiritual side, right? Which I think is like such a cliche of like women. I think women turn 30 and they're suddenly like, wow, the universe.
Hannah loves tarot cards.
I love tarot cards.
That's what she wants to tell everyone.
but it's like, I think it's a genuine thing, right? Like female energy and just like the spirituality that women are interested in and is like connects women like across like the world. And yet it is like seen as such a like weird, you know, woo-woo thing that doesn't make any sense. And it's like laughed at, really.
Yeah, it really is.
But actually, like, there's probably a lot, there's a lot of like connection in it. But also, like, I'm sure a lot of it means things, like, but maybe there just isn't the science like to sit behind it. But then when men are like, you know, looking at like a spirit, like spiritual sides of things. It has this like, there's so much respect for it, for like, you know, men looking inwards, which, you know, is great and important, but it's so interesting how differently it's perceived.
Yeah. I was talking to one of my friends, Lauren, who's a coach about this. And she was like, oh, actually, now I think about it, all the books about like women's growth are put in like a kind of different section of the library, and they're like self-help and they're really soft. Whereas the ones written by men are like these thought leadership sections of the library. Like it's just completely like dealt with so differently.
Yeah, definitely. I was looking for a book recently on like astrology, and it was in this whole section of like psychic books and things like that. And then there's this whole section on like popular science, which is all like male spirituality. It's very, yeah, very like a very clear divide between the two sort of.
It's not respected in the same way.
Mm.
So this is one I like to throw at people. If there's like a myth or misconception or societal expectation that just needs to be thrown in the bin for this period of life, what would you think it is?
I guess it's like, I would say what we've kind of touched on already, just about how like this image of single women just being so tragic. Like,
yeah.
I think there's actually so much power in being a single woman, especially in your 30s when you have so much of a better idea of yourself, so much better sense of identity. And yeah, I think actually, yeah, it's, there is so much opportunity there, and so much potential to just be happy as a single woman, not necessarily looking for like, looking for a next long-term relationship. And yeah, it doesn't have to be a sad thing. And actually cats are cool. So being a cat lady is a positive thing.
Cats are cool. I mean, I'm allergic, but they are cool. And you do have a cat.
I do. I am a cat lady. I'm proud.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also, I remember I read this, or it was a quote that I heard. It was like that the most dangerous, it's like the most dangerous women are the ones with self-worth, or like the most dangerous thing that a woman can have is self-worth.
Right.
And I think it was actually a TV critic who was talking about it in relation to like a series that had come out. But because when you have self-worth and you're not looking for things to solve you, you're like the hardest person to control.
Right.
And also you're the hardest person to sell to, because a woman who's like happy in themselves, who's not fucking buying the £200 skin cream or whatever, or the latest outfit or whatever, they've said goodbye to those things, and they, yeah, they're hard to like make money out of.
Yeah. And I think that's it. It's like this whole, like, just, yeah, going back to the image of the cat lady again. But it's like, it is interesting that, like, society is, does seem to be, like, trying so hard to minimise
a,
like...
Minimise is such a good word.
I was thinking, we were talking earlier about, like, how I've heard that women, yeah, single women over 40 are, like, the happiest demographic. I'm sure that, like, there's lots of levels to that. But I think at least, like, being in your 30s, like there is a lot of focus on like physical image, right? But I can imagine as you get older and you sort of like become, I guess, like more comfortable in yourself, but also like you will learn to like let go of that a little bit as like looks become less important, that I can just imagine that's just like another level of like things to let go of that. Yeah, that would just be so liberating. Like I already feel so much of that journey already that I can just imagine like once you kind of let like become more comfortable with your physical appearance and that's just like, yeah, I just, that just feels quite exciting.
That also like feels way more possible, I think, when you're not in like a long-term relationship or a marriage, because there definitely is a layer of like, you know, Chris is in a job where he meets loads and loads of people all the time. There's definitely like, it makes me hypersensitive of how I look because of my relationship to him, because it's like, well, there's always going to be this element of competition to a degree. And it's like, yeah, you actually could let go of that. And maybe if there wasn't this constant reminder of like, you know, a partner who maybe enforces those things.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like, I guess where I am at now, like I am dating. And so that is a part, big part of my life, I guess. And that, obviously, like how you look physically is a big part of that. That I don't know, like maybe I will get to a point where like I won't be dating as much, and then that's just like a whole different frame of mind, right?
It's even just taking the power out of it. It's like not being consumed by it.
Yeah.
Change, you can still do it, but like changing your relationship to it.
Yeah.
So I put this out to the audience, asked the audience. I didn't know exactly what question to put on for your episode. So we did a little bit around long-term relationships coming to an end, thoughts on marriage, thoughts on divorce. And we did have a couple of people write in, so I'm going to go into them.
Okay.
So this is a anonymous female who is 31. She said, so marriage in your early 20s is nuts. I realised I was barely an adult at that point. I was 22 and I married someone 12 years older than me. We're still married and it's worked out, but it has been rough. I'm not the same person I was when I was 22 and I'm literally not sure I even remember her. I didn't want kids and were told I couldn't have them, but then I fell pregnant at 25.
Wow.
And that also changed the game. Growing into someone totally different while being married to someone who is older and has already figured most of themselves out was such a mental ride.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Wow, what a story.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely relate to that. Like, I mean, I got married when I was 29. It's not exactly that young, but yeah. it does feel it looking back that I'm like, wow, I feel so much more myself, feel like I know so much more now than I did then. But I think more in the context, like when I met my ex, with him being 30 and
so what your age gap when you okay 30 it was 8 22 years,
yeah. Yeah, and yeah, like I definitely felt like I just finished uni, like just moved to London, like feel like it was very much like starting off. Whereas I feel like he had like other long-term relationships and was like much more settled in himself. I also think there's something I find quite interesting about the fact that I was very close to the age he was. When we broke up, I was very close to the age that he was when we met. And I know a few friends who have been dating older men and that has happened. And I think there's just something like you're like, okay, I now, like subconsciously, like I'm now in the same place in life as you were. And like it just makes you reflect on things a little bit. So, yeah, I definitely felt like I was taking the lead from him in our relationship. Like it was the only like long-term relationship I've had. And yeah, I just felt like, yeah, was learning who I was throughout that relationship. Whereas I think for him, that he'd done that journey already.
Because also when you say your only long-term relationship you had, what was your longest before that? Because I can't even remember.
like nothing, a few months,
right?
Yeah.
So that's like an interesting thing because I was thinking about that the other day. Like Chris hadn't dated much. He'd had like a couple of girlfriends, but he'd had a school girlfriend, which I think was like 2.5 years or something.
Right.
And I do think that makes a big difference. Like I was obviously a serial player before I met Chris, but also I'd had so many boyfriends, which were like 6 months, a year, a year and a half, another year and a half, which really just shows my streak of non-success.
No,
but it makes a difference.
Oh, also, like, you learn so much throughout all of that. Like, you know, and I feel like I am just through dating, right? Like, it doesn't have to be, like, a long-term relationship. But I think, like, for me, in the context of my relationship, it's, like, just like, oh, this is how it's done. Like, this is how relationships are. Like,
right.
I didn't feel like I had the knowledge.
Like the comparison either.
Yeah, to question it. And until it got to that point where I was like, I'm not happy. Like, it didn't feel like I had enough knowledge to be like, oh, wait, no, this doesn't feel right. I need it to be more like this. Or like, I'm expecting more like that. Because I just felt like, okay, like, he's older. Like, he, like, I don't know, like, he knows how this is done and I don't, you know?
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, what else do people say? This is actually another age gap one. So my ex and I, oh, this is a female. She's 36. My ex and I met when I was 25 and he is amazing, but the relationship was already dwindling when COVID hit. That year, a lot of things changed for me career-wise. And for the first time, I can envision myself a future that wasn't so bleak. We'd had many conversations in the past about kids where we always left it as status quo. But that year I said no more. We broke up and it was hard, but we had a lovely breakup. It was just before lockdown. We got 6 weeks to say goodbye and now we both have new partners and we're on good terms. My current partner is 48, I'm 35, and he's amazing. But being a grown-up now, I can definitely see where he's emotionally immature, saying this with love, in brackets, as his awakening happened at 40. I don't think a woman his age would put up with some of this shit, not going to lie. At the moment, I'm choosing to give his growth a chance, as a lot of change in the last few years for the better.
Wow, that's really interesting. And actually, that's made me think, like, I know I was saying, just saying now, like, that my ex had like sort of, he felt like a lot more mature when we started going out. But I think actually
that was probably why I got to that point where I had this, where like turning 30 had this point of like reflection, because I was like, when I was 22 and he was 30, he felt so much more emotionally mature. And then when I got to that point, I was like, oh, wait, no, like he's not. Like, and yeah, like, yes, he's 8 years older than me, but like still has all of this growth to do, or is he going to do it? And I think that's where I got to, is like, actually, I don't think it's going to change. Right. And like, and I'm now at that same age that he was. And that's the comparison. And actually, it made me be able to see more clearly what wasn't going to change ever.
Mm.
Yeah.
What's kind of interesting is the narrative around age gap relationships. Mm. Because I don't inherently think age gap relationships are negative, but I think people maybe don't consider them throughout your whole life period. Yeah. Like when I was 21, I was dating someone who's 35. And when we broke up, I dated another guy who was 36. I would have been like 22-ish. And at the time, I didn't think it was weird at all. And now when I look back, I'm like, the idea of one of my friends or myself dating someone like that much younger is like unbelievable. And I do think that there's a little bit of truth. And I'm not saying this is the case for you guys, but I think there is a little bit of truth of sometimes men much older with a big age gap, it's like because they actually want someone who isn't emotionally mature enough to be like, hey, by the way, I have boundaries and like I have self-worth and this is fucking shit and I expect more from you.
Yeah, yeah. 100% think there is an element, especially when it's like a longer term relationship, an element of like, oh, a younger woman is a bit more like adaptable. Malleable. Yeah, exactly. Ooh. Right. And like can fit into what I want here.
Mm.
Whereas, yeah, as you get older, you know yourself a bit more, you have more, I don't know, more weight in that and like a clearer idea of what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And like, so, you know, like I've had like a couple of things with like younger guys since I broke up with my ex.
I live for the stories.
So like two things with guys who are both like 8 years younger, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like it's a big age gap, but it's the same as me and my ex, right? But the other way.
Mm.
And I have like, you know, when I met my ex, I was like, oh, he's 8 years older. And like, you know, it was a thing to start with. But like, at no point did anyone say like, ooh, like that's a big age gap. Or like, are you sure? Like there was none of that. Whereas like when I've been like getting involved with younger guys, I have been so like nervous about doing it. Like, you know, asking all my friends, is it okay? Like all of this stuff. And then I'm like, no, do you know what? Like it's the exact same age gap, just the other way around. And I know what that's like, and I know how to do it in a way that I think is healthy. And it's like, you know, it's not like a long-term relationship, which, you know, I don't have an issue with, but it's obviously a totally different thing that you're going into.
Mm. When you ask us, we just go, does he have a six-pack? Do those exist still?
You guys are just like, generation? Like living vicariously through me.
I do. I live for it. I think that is a thing that people don't maybe think about enough, the power dynamic sometimes in an age gap relationship, but also that when you get older, it can be difficult as well. So, yeah. I mean, my dad and his partner have an 18-year age gap, and I think it obviously throws up challenges because she's still like very, very young and fit. And thankfully, my dad is very healthy. He has, touch wood, good health, and like he's very sporty and he's not like an old man. But, you know, it's possible that there could be a health condition. Yeah. Suddenly you're at very different stages, like being 50 something and 70 something is different. This is anonymous. We don't know who this is from. I'm presuming it's a woman because they're talking about their husband, and most of my followers are either single gays or shacked up girls.
Okay.
Been with my husband since I was 19, now 32, and regretting not dating more and finding myself in my 20s. Doing so while I'm in the relationship is twice as hard. We also have an age gap of 13 years, so different growth times is coming into play to make it harder.
Wow.
Yeah. Regretting not dating enough in your 20s. Did you regret that?
I did. What do you think? I feel like that's normal to have that feeling every now and then. If you're like,
I fucking dated.
You did it all.
I'm so far on the spectrum that like, I was just obsessed with boys. Obsessed.
Yeah, no, you really did it all.
I dated everyone. I think I had like nine. No, I don't think that's true. I think I probably had like six people.
Yeah.
Maybe more if I counted on my hand that I would class as like actual boyfriends. That's actually mind blowing. And considering I met Chris when I was, 22 or 23? I don't know.
Yeah.
Cray cray.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, I definitely had that thought like a few times in the relationship. And I think even when things were good, it was just like, oh, like, you know, you're always going to like, you know, wonder what like the other side looks like, right? Yeah. But then I would remind myself of all the crazy things I did. And I was like, oh no, like actually, like I did okay. Like I had a fun single time. But yeah. But when it then came to that question of like, oh, am I happy in this relationship or not? Like, obviously that all looks like super tempting and yeah. Get that. It's hard.
Yeah, I think you always have that, like, and I think it's different for me and Chris because he didn't date loads before. I think he doesn't have like that real memory of like meeting loads of new people, because that's an inevitable thing, is like when you get married or when you're in a long-term relationship, you don't ever get that same like, oh, do they like me, do they not, like that initial, like, I mean, there's so many other great feelings, but that is a very unique moment of like, oh, tension, which is exciting. Like, I don't think anyone can, if they're in a long-term relationship, can be honest with themselves and say like, oh, I don't miss that at all.
Yeah,
it's a fun feeling.
It is
the chase.
It is. It's also very anxiety inducing.
Yeah, but fun.
It is fun. But you know, there's trade-offs with that, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm 100% one of those people who's so much better in a relationship. Like, as you're like, bitch, we know.
But well, no, you're great at being single as well. As
no, Hannah, I was never great at being single. What are you talking about? I was psychopathic.
Yeah, you had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It is fun, that feeling, the chase and all of that. And like, and that's the thing is like, I don't know, maybe the novelty will wear off at some point, but like, I love dating. I think it's so fun. And I always like, I think it's important to acknowledge that it is fun, and like there are fun things about being single, there are advantages of being single as well as advantages of being in a relationship. And like, it does get to me sometimes when people, single people and people in relationships, are like, oh, like dating, like, you know, it's like, it's so tiring and all of this, and like,
yeah,
no, like it's fun.
Okay, this submission was really long. I'm gonna try and keep my dyslexia inside and allow me to read it. So, I got out of a serious relationship when I was turning 29. I felt like the world was ahead of me and I had so much time. I dated a lot and had loads of fun. What I hadn't been prepared for was a situationship. People had always fallen for me fast, and getting into relationships was never a problem. Okay, girl. The first situationship floored me. I was more heartbroken at the end of that than my significant breakups. Teetering on the edge of being important to someone whilst also not being important enough was what sent me to therapy. My anxiety was high and my self-worth was low. It took time to rebuild, and since then I've refused to enter anything even remotely like a situationship. I've been getting to know myself better and my dating preferences better. I didn't want to get to 65 and be upset that I'd never dated a woman or had a threesome, explored different kinks or gone to a sex party. So I did all of those things and it was confronting and exciting. I learned so much about myself. This brought me closer to some friends and alienated me from others. I've decided not to be in a rush to find my next relationship. However, finding an intellectual, sexual, and communicative match is much harder now that I'm more in touch with my authentic self. My standards are high because I've ignored red flags before and I refuse to do it again. My self-worth is high. I know I'm a whole without that approval, and it's a relief not having to find a partner and the pressure of that. But that doesn't mean it's not hard around Christmas or during winter. Wanting someone to cozy up with, to acknowledge that most of my affection comes from my friends with benefits rather than someone I'm in love with, can sometimes make me wonder whether I'll ever be in love again. I've fallen into a place where I don't need anyone, which is actually a hard place to let someone in from, but I'm hopeful, even though dating in London is dire.
Wow.
So much to unpack, no?
So much to unpack. The first thing that I thought of is like, is it her?
It's her, yeah.
Yeah. Saying that like at 29 felt like she had like so much time ahead of her. Because I think that's definitely how I felt. And then it was like very quickly, it's like, oh, I'm 32. Like everyone's getting married and having kids. So it didn't feel like that like a few years ago.
Yeah.
But also like relate in the fact that like, you know, that there was like a guy that I met after my breakup. Well, I knew before, but like, had a thing with like after my breakup that it didn't work out with, that and that like that floored me like way so disproportionately to what it actually was. But it was definitely like a sense of like after the end of like my marriage was like reaching out for something to like hold on to, and then like when that didn't materialize the way I wanted, like that just absolutely broke me. But
situationship vibe as well, yeah, right? Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, so do you think maybe it was like the contrast of like this very solid, reliable thing, and then you're like, oh, what's this flakiness?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, and I think actually what you were just saying about like that excitement of the chase, right? And it was like that excitement of something new, not being sure, is he into me, is he not? Like that whole like emotional unavailability is so sexy. And then, yeah, just it absolutely screwed me over. And I read something the other day that about like how after you come out of a relationship, it's like the 90-10 rule.
Ooh.
And it's like, so like long, say like your long-term partner gives you 90% of what you need, right?
Yeah.
And then the first person that you meet afterwards or that you are involved with afterwards will give you that 10% of what you didn't have. And you're so drawn to that that you ignore the fact that they don't give you the other 90%, but you're just really
drawn to that. So interesting.
Yeah. I definitely see that with what happened to me.
That reminds me of when I was dating that horrible man who worked in advertising. He was much older than me. He was just awful and was real, like, situationship, never knew where I stood.
Right.
I then rebounded and dated that really nice Swedish guy. Do you remember?
Yeah.
He was just, like, the sweetest human being in the world and just, like, bless him. I was like, can I date someone who's just, like, a normal human being and not a sociopath?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was that 10% of like stability, kindness, knowing where I stood.
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely relate to what she's saying about like being in a place where you don't need anyone, right? And like, and I think what she said about like having like friends with benefits and realizing that's where like a lot of her needs are met, but like it's never going to be like everything you need, right? And definitely still feel like sad sometimes, and then it's like hard for me to like unpack if that's just like feeling like lonely or like missing my ex or like what, like,
right,
you know. But there's always moments where you feel like the odd one out for being single, right? And like, but you can be as satisfied as you want with the rest of your life, but they're like, that is the society we live in where like it is the norm to be in a long-term committed relationship. So like, yeah, there's always going to be some like some pressure from different places.
One thing that I found tricky recently, or not necessarily tricky, but I was really conscious of and I was aware of, is obviously you were my, we didn't call it maid of honour. What did we call it?
Chief wedding person?
Chief wedding wing woman. She was wedding wench, something like that. Chief wedding wench at my wedding. And obviously you had to go through the process, which was not fun with me, of buying a wedding dress, where I was a nightmare and had a meltdown many, many times. But how was that for you? Because obviously it's still like a fairly fresh thing.
Yeah.
Divorce.
It was interesting. Like, I remember there was one moment where it was the first time we went shopping for your wedding dress. And there was a point you tried on a dress and they played in the shop the song that I walked down the aisle to.
Oh my God, didn't
and
they?
I was just like, it was one of those moments that, where you're like, universe, like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, you're really like playing with me. And that obviously made me sad. And I was like, oh, this is going to be hard.
Yeah.
But like, aside from that, which is just like a horrible coincidence, the like, it didn't. And I don't know, it was just like the way you handled it. I was just like, I don't think you ever got so like in your head about the wedding that you forget who anyone else was and like what my situation was. I always felt, I knew like I could come to you and be like, you know, I'm finding stuff hard or whatever. Like, you know, I never felt like that was all, you were like 100% capacity wedding and like there was no room for anyone else. Like,
oh, I'm glad.
Yeah.
I wasn't a full bridezilla.
No. At your wedding, I do remember someone said something like, oh, like one of those like comments like, oh, like we've all got to hurry up or something like that. And I was just like, that just really pissed me off. So I was like, stop making out that it's like a race, firstly. And secondly, like, I have done this. Like,
yeah, you're like, I fucking did it first.
Yeah, like I'm winning.
Yeah, I'm winning because I've already got to the divorce part, which 50% of people will. So
yeah, it's more just one of those moments like we were just saying about like, it's more normal to be in a couple in those circumstances, right? Like at a wedding, like most people are. So I think you're like more aware of your singleness in those moments. I did go to one wedding last year that I'd found really hard, and that was like, it was almost exactly the anniversary, my wedding anniversary, and like the first one since the breakup. And it was actually at a venue that we'd gone to look around.
Oh really?
Yeah. So I think that whole time I was like, this is like so similar to like our wedding.
Yeah, it's rough.
That was tough. But generally, everyone does it in such a different way that, and as long as
you know, your friends still have some capacity to know what you're going through. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. It's good to do as well. I think it's also something people should be mindful of, like, with kids. It's like, you should always, you know, it's not that you should censor what you say necessarily around friends, but, like, I have some friends at the moment who are trying to conceive, and they said it's almost like painful being around their friends with kids.
Right.
They've got friends who are having second kids, and like, it's really difficult for them. And they were like, it's really, yeah, it is difficult to like find that common ground now with friends.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I think that's something where it's like, it's hard to relate if you haven't experienced it, right? Like,
And especially if you really want to, yeah. if you're like, I'm trying to have a baby and this is difficult, but yeah. I want to be a part of this conversation.
Yeah, whereas I think in our situation, it's like, I know I could relate to what you were going through, right? Mm-hmm. So like, that helped me. Whereas like, I think if it's like, you're finding it hard to be around your friends with kids when you don't have kids, like, you can't understand what their head's like, right?
Yeah.
So I think that changes things. And actually that made me think, like, just over a year ago, one of my best friends broke up with her partner. I was in a long-term relationship, and like, she took it really, really hard. And I found that actually more triggering than like doing all these weddings and things,
really?
Because it took me back, and I like
that pain.
Yeah. And like, just being there for her, like, just, yeah, reminded me of how hard that early stage was. Yeah. And I found that a lot more difficult actually.
Okay, so we like to throw a little segment every now and then.
Okay.
I would like to know, knowing what you know now, what's one thing you'd tell yourself 10 years ago?
Ooh, that's a big question.
It's a big question.
Would I have done things differently? Like, some things, yes. I don't know. The last couple of years have been really hard. But, like, I'm glad of where I am at right now. So in that sense, I'm like, oh, would you change anything? Yeah. I think I would, like, I felt under so much pressure to do what was expected of me in life, to like get married and just show that I was capable of doing those things, I guess. And I think I would tell myself like that doesn't matter, and like, just to like listen to myself a bit more. Yeah, and just follow your heart.
Even your language of like that I was capable to do those things is so interesting, because it's such a badge, isn't it? Of being like, I am worthy, you know?
I know. And it feels so silly, because I never thought of myself as someone who was under that kind of pressure. Like, I don't know where that has really come from. But yet, like, taking that decision to step outside of what that traditional route that was expected of me has made me realize how focused I was on doing those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is actually quite an exciting one. So what's one thing you'd wish for yourself in 10 years?
Oh, I don't know. I guess like, part of what my weird years have taught me, right, is that I had all these expectations of what my life was going to look like and all these hopes and dreams and goals that didn't work out the way I'd planned.
Yeah.
So it has been like a huge thing for me to let go of that and to be like, I'm not going to set myself these expectations, because like, a lot of it's out of my control, and just to go with the flow. And so, yeah, I mean, like, it's a cliche and a boring answer, but like, in 10 years time, like, I just want to be happy.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know what that looks like. If that means me being on my own, being a crazy cat lady, like, great. If it means I've met like someone that I want to have kids with and I'm doing that, like, great as well. Like, but I'm not going to set any expectations of what that might look like. I'm just going to see what happens.
And you do have room in your flat for more cats, so.
No, I think it's I'm a one cat lady.
Well, you say that now. We'll see. We'll come back to that. Okay, so I'm going to throw a segment at you.
Okay.
This is called Yes or Mess. I'm going to ask you 5 rapid fire questions.
Okay.
And you have to say yes or mess.
Okay.
You can expand a little bit if you want. Romanticizing marriage.
Mess.
Fair. Number 2, Emily Ratajkowski claiming that it is chic to be divorced by the age of 30.
Yes.
Hot. How are we feeling about monogamy? Yes or mess?
Ooh. I'm undecided on this one. I think mess, in the sense of like what we have always thought of as monogamy. I think I think being 100% monogamous for one person for a lifetime is unrealistic, but what that looks like, I'm undecided.
To be continued.
Mm.
Dating younger men solely because they're hot.
Yes.
Approved. ditching marriage completely and creating a coven.
Yes, let's do it.
Fabulous. Just asking for a friend. Just if things don't work out, that is where I will be. Well, that's enough of our yapping. Okay. Thanks very much, Han. Thanks for being on the pod.
Loved it.
Oh, and before you go, if you enjoyed this chat, please do like and subscribe. It helps to keep this project going. Also, we're in this collective confusion together, so we really love to hear your stories. Each week, we ask for your point of view on the upcoming topic. So head over to our Instagram, @theweirdyearspodcast, to share your thoughts, feelings, and little stories.